This is Studio 360. I'm Kurt Anderson. Mark Halperin has been a scholar, a sailor, a soldier, a dishwasher, a mountain climber, and a farmer, and a conservative commentator. He's also one of our country's finest living fiction writers. His great novel, Winter's Tale, was his breakthrough book in 1983. Now he's back with another epic story of love and loss, crime and punishment, also set in New York City, but in another age, just after World War II. It's called In Sunlight and in Shadow. Mark Halperin, welcome back to Studio 360.
Thank you.
On your website, you quote another writer calling this book a love song for my family. How is it that?
Well, that writer was Norman MacLean. And
the river runs through it guy.
A river runs through it, yeah. When it came out, and it was adored, rightfully, he got a letter from someone in Hollywood. Norman MacLean, in this wonderful letter, of which I have a copy, wrote to him and said two things. The first thing was, he said, I wrote this book as a love song to my family. And he said, and I waited until I was an old man so that I could get just the right tone to do so. It was too important not to do that. And I have not written an autobiographical novel since my first novel.
Refiner's Fire.
Yeah, which I didn't know was autobiographical. This is what happens. Everyone who writes a novel, the first novel is almost invariably autobiographical.
If you're young, anyway.
Yeah, and I guarantee you the author does not know it. I used to argue with people, no, it's not autobiographical. But of course it was. You just don't know. It's a sin that can be forgiven. But this one I know is autobiographical in many ways, lots of poetic license. 80% of it is true, more or less. But it's a little bit...
Really? True about your parents?
Yeah, true about my parents and things that happened to them or to me.
It's significant in the book that your protagonist, Harry Copeland, is Jewish, but he is definitely unhooked from any religious observance part of being Jewish. Was that you drawing on your or your father's own idea of what it means to be Jewish?
Both, but I don't know about idea of what it means. Actually, it's a reflection of the reality. My father, I come from way back, the Hasidic tradition. We were Hasidic Jews in the Pale of Settlement, and some very well known, of course, not like Brad Pitt, but maybe among Hasidim like Brad Pitt. Very, very famous rabbis and seers and gaonim. But that ended with my father, who's even though his father was an elder of the synagogue and my father was bar mitzvahed and everything, he rebelled. And he became a non-practicing Jew, although he was extremely Jewish in every respect. You can't just shed it unless you're a fake. And then I was not bar mitzvahed. I have only set foot in a synagogue to attend the bar mitzvahs of friends or my children's friends. But nonetheless, I am still very Jewish.
And in this book, set in the 40s, with this Jewish character, the Holocaust barely makes it into conversation.
It does. Of course, in the late 40s, people didn't really know.
It hadn't been
publicized, yeah. The first book that I remember seeing about it was called The Scourge of the Swastika by Lord Russell of Liverpool. He was a British war crimes prosecutor. And my father brought that book brought it home from England in 1954. And no one had ever seen anything like it. No one had collected it. The scale of it was not in the public mind.
And Anne Frank's diaries had just been
That's
published.
Right. That's right. I mean, just recently at that time.
In the title itself, In Sunlight and in Shadow, is kind of a motif in the book, appropriately, Light Against Darkness, with all the characters pretty much purely heroic or villainous. Isn't great literature supposed to be about nuances and ambiguity?
These days, the literary conventions are such that you're supposed to be really cautious. You're supposed to, I believe, from what little I know of it, it's my stab at this, the novel or the novella or whatever it is should be short, limited in scope, very cautious so that you don't stick your neck out, take a chance, rigor rather than richness. richness is embarrassing, you know, description, oh no, metaphor, and simile, don't do that, don't do that. That's because that's the old days. Now what you have to show is how cool you are.
Although for the last 25 years, haven't we, in fact, haven't the literary conventions put that Raymond Carver precisionist shortness thing behind us, and now epic richness is everywhere?
Well, I wouldn't know.
What, you don't read contemporary literature except your own novels?
No, I don't read my own novels. In fact, people say, oh, well, what do you think about Soldier of the Great War, the such and such? And you know, I have 12 drafts, usually, before it goes to the public. And for instance, Soldier of the Great War was 1,500 manuscript pages. You go over that 12 times.
Oh, and you don't want to read it.
And you don't ever want to read it again.
Take my word for it. Yeah. It's not what it used to be in terms of things considered great works of fiction not being allowed to be grand and epic and all the things.
Oh,
you
well,
just
that's mentioned. Good because then it sort of swung back to what I am. I never left it.
It has swung back to what you are. In Winter's Tale, you went all magically realist. You haven't read the book since. I have, however. In service to this epic story with a flying horse and time travel and guardian angels. This one, it is committed for its various similarities to that book. It's pretty strictly realistic. Was when you begin a book like this, is that the notion? This is going to be entirely realistic?
No. It's a funny thing, in the same way that young people don't know that their first novels are autobiographical, I had no idea that Winter's Tale was in any way other than realistic.
Because you grew up with flying horses.
Yeah, well, I grew up flying off horses, but I really didn't think of it that way. What I thought of it as was an extension of the romance. As far as this one goes, I must admit, though, that when my father read Winter's Tale, it was
right before his death.
Right before his death. It was dedicated to him. He was in good health when he read it, but then he died shortly the year after. I overheard him saying to my mother, and he didn't know that I overheard him, he's got to write a book in which everything that happens can actually happen. And I don't know, maybe subconsciously, when I wrote this one, I took his advice.
Water and ice loomed large in that book. And I mention it again and again because it is, by most accounts, your greatest work. And it certainly is the work of yours that just bowled me over. But there's the lake upstate. There's the Hudson River. There's the New York Harbor. And the big moments in this book, in Sunlight and in Shadow, also happen by the water, I noticed, on the Staten Island Ferry and looking over the East River and the Hudson, on the beach in the Hamptons. You were in the British Merchant Navy for a little while.
I was. And
what is it with you and water?
Well, I got to tell you, I was in the British Merchant Navy. And then later on, quite a few years later, 5 or 6 years later, when I came back, I was a graduate student at Princeton. And I was in comparative literature, and I was required to take a course called Variations of the Romantic Self. And one of the things that we read in a little seminar with graduate students was The Rime of the Ancient Mariner, in which there's a talk about fish that glow and very odd things in the water that the ancient mariner sees. So everyone was saying, well, that must be a symbol of this, and this is a symbol of the weather. So I raised my hand, and I said, it's not a symbol. It's real. And they said, you know, fish that glow? And I said, yeah. And they said, well, what are you talking about? And I said, well, don't you know about bioluminescent fish? Or anything? So they were scientifically ignorant, but they'd never heard of that. And so then they leaned forward over the table and said, how do you know? And I said, well, I've seen them. And they said, you've seen them? And I said, yeah, I was in the British Merchant Navy, and come to think of it, just like the Ancient Mariner, it was true. We avoided a storm. We were becalmed on the Sargasso Sea, and at night we took lifeboats out and we lowered them down and we took them out and we rowed through the Sargasso Sea, and you look down and you see all these incredible looking fish that are gleaming and glowing and everything like that. Well, they thought I was insane.
I see why you never made a career in academia, because you had too much real experience and insufficient a recourse to symbolism in literature.
I did, because I never... Well, I mean, criticism, to me, is fine, but it's not what I should do. When people... For instance, John Updike wrote tons of criticism for The New Yorker. And
he was a really good art critic, for instance.
And he's a very good art critic. Other writers write a lot of criticism, and they review books. I've never reviewed a fiction book. I look at criticism this way. Baseball players are not sports announcers. See, if I were a baseball player, I wouldn't be...
They become first base coaches and stuff, but, you know...
Later.
Yeah.
Yeah. While you're playing, put all your energy into it.
And you're still playing.
And I'm still playing, and I hope to play till I die.
It seems to me, perhaps you, knowing what I know about you, having read your books, like writing in historical fiction, not because... Ooh, look, we can read about other times, but because this sense of honor and men were men and women were women is more plausible than if you set novels in 2012.
Yeah. Put it this way. I don't want to come into the new age. I'm thinking about the most of my life, which has occurred in a previous age, and there's a great deal worthwhile in that, which I don't want to forget. And I don't want to leave. And the values that I in times of trial stuck with and proved, I'm not going to simply throw by the roadside because there happens to be a fashion or a fad.
I can't think of another artist of your stature who is an avowed conservative, which you are. And politics and political commentary are a kind of sideline of yours. As you look at this election and look and stew in the politics of the moment, is there a large question that our politics ought to be addressing and in any meaningful sense isn't?
Of course. We're in absolute denial about a million things, but just to pick two as I can't present an acceptance speech, although I have written them, but just to pick two things as
you worked for Bob Dole in
1996. Yeah, yeah. I did. I didn't work for him because I never took
money. You wrote speeches for him.
Yeah, I'm always a volunteer. I've never taken money for anything like that. Never took an advance except once when my children were sick. Never wrote a work for hire or anything like that. I try to stay clean. But the first thing is arithmetically, you cannot keep on printing money to pay for things if you can't afford them. And this is not a question of ideology. It's a question of arithmetic. The second thing is our standing in the world. And when I say standing, I don't care about prestige. I don't care if people like us, dislike us, whatever. I'm talking about the international system. Since the beginning of organized political bodies, the international system has worked in such a way that if there is an imbalance in it, there will be war. And there will be oppression, there will be invasion, countries will be tempted to expand into empires, et cetera, et cetera. So you have to maintain a balance of power. As Leonard Cohen says, and this I just heard, I'm not absolutely positive, someone I trust told me this, he wrote a haiku. And the haiku is very simple. It says, "You won't like what happens after America."
I am astounded. I wonder if Leonard Cohen has ever been quoted in the service of military preparedness. But I'm happy to. Maybe it's a first.
Yeah.
It seems as though you are fervently held political ideas and involvements are compartmentalized from your writing of fiction. As you're writing a story or a novel, you're not looking for ways to infuse those fictions with your politics.
No. Never. I mean, first of all, it's just very narrow to want to infuse your book with political propaganda, and it won't last even if you're successful.
Right.
I would never think of wanting to put a message in the book.
As the Hollywood mogul said, if you want to send a message,
send a telegram.
Call Western Union. Mark Halperin, thank you so much for being here today.
It was a pleasure, really.
Mark Halperin's new novel is called In Sunlight and in Shadow, and it's out now.
And who by a fire, who by a water, who in the sunshine, who in the nighttime, who by high ordeal, who by common trial, who in your merry, merry month of May, who by very slow decay, and who shall I say?